This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. How much did it cost to fill up your car today? The price of a barrel of oil is now more than $55 a barrel. Across the country, that translates into an average of $2.27 for a gallon of gas. And, of course, that varies. That's $2.64 a gallon in San Francisco, $2.04 a gallon in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Those prices are actually down a nickel or so over the weekend. But with the summer travel season just a couple of months away now, the expectation is that prices are still trending up. And the cost to fill the car is only part of the price we all pay. Energy affects anything that's transported by road, electricity, airfares, and a million other things as well. At his ranch in Crawford, Texas today, President Bush met with Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, the world's largest oil producer. In a diplomatic dance, the president asked the Saudi leader to help bring down the price of oil while at the same time keep on the pressure against terrorism and for democratic reform. We'll find out about that in a minute. We'll also ask about what's likely to happen over the next few years. Will high prices prompt more oil production here and abroad? What about alternative energy sources? Later in the program, the Democratic Party looks for ways to reach conservative values voters and your letters. But first, the high price of oil. How has it affected your life and your business? What'll you do if it stays high? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us first for an understanding of today's talks in Crawford is Judith Kipper, director of the Middle East Forum at the Council on Foreign Relations. She's just returned from a three-week visit to several Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia. Judith Kipper joins us by phone from her office here in Washington. Nice to have you on the program again.
Thank you so much.
Saudi Arabia, of course, a strategic ally of the United States. The president, the top of his agenda, at least if we're listening to the public statements, was the cost of oil.
Yes, it was, and it was somewhat surprising because the Saudis have always been extremely forthcoming in managing the supply as well as the cost of oil. There is a very clear and close strategic understanding between the kingdom and the United States about the supply and the cost. So the president, I think, probably announced this prior to the meeting more for domestic reasons than for Saudi reasons, because the Saudis have already indicated they're going to invest and expand their capacity, and they are always the swing producer in order in terms of increased capacity.
Well, they have a less swing capacity than they used to, and investing in, you know, future fields, that's going to come on, they're saying, in 2009.
Yes, they're saying it's 2009, and energy security is a major strategic issue for the United States. We at home need an energy security policy, need to conserve and to look at our some of our lifestyle questions, where we should still be able to have luxury vehicles but more efficient ones. At the same time, we need to work closely with the oil producers, not only in the Gulf, but other places as well, about investment to look for increased supply, as well as refining. The United States hasn't built a refinery since the 1970s. The Saudis have offered to build one here. So far, they have not heard from the United States as to whether we would like them to undertake a project of that nature. So having to do with energy, as a global commodity, the United States has a lot of homework to do domestically in order to face the challenge globally.
Well, the prince, the crown prince, is he going to be asking something in return for flexibility on oil prices?
I don't think it'll be in return, because the Saudis and the U.S., as I said, have a close strategic relationship. The U.S. Treasury and the Energy Department are literally in touch with the Saudis as well as others on a daily basis. What I think the Crown Prince will be asking about is the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. That is the number one issue between the Arabs and the United States. The question of Iraq has somewhat diminished in the region, but the Israeli-Palestinian conflict remains the number one irritant for the Arab states between the U.S. And the Arab populations, who have expressed a great degree of anti-Americanism. And when you ask them why, it's the Palestinian issue that is the main focus of that anti-Americanism.
So the on the American agenda, it may be oil and terrorism and democracy, but the Crown Prince's agenda, the first item was his longstanding now proposal for his peace offer, a complete peace with all of the Arab states for Israel if it would return to its pre-1967 borders.
Yes, I think that's right. But on my trip to Saudi Arabia, and I did meet with the Crown Prince and with others very senior in the government, it's clear that the Saudis are somewhat confused and even miffed, because in the first term, when the Crown Prince succeeded in getting all 22 Arab states to accept this historic notion that once Israel and Palestine sign a treaty, that they, all the Arab states, will have perfectly normal relations with the state of Israel, full normal diplomatic relations, and that the American response, both from the president at that time and the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, at the time, was less than enthusiastic. In fact, it was lukewarm. And I think that the Crown Prince really had his pride a little bit hurt by that, because it was a historic achievement.
Judith Kipper, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Judith Kipper directs the Middle East Forum at the Council on Foreign Relations, joined us by phone from her office here in Washington, D.C. But let's get back to oil. Joining us now is Phil Flynn, a vice president and senior oil analyst at Aileron Trading. He's with us from his office in Chicago. It's nice to speak with you again.
Thank you so much.
$55 a barrel for oil. Is this something we are now all going to have to get used to?
I think we better get used to it, and it could have been even higher. It was $56 earlier this morning, but when the headlines came out of the Crawford meeting, the Bush was kind of talking tough with the Crown Prince about oil prices. They backed off. So sometimes tough talk out of the president can mean a little bit lower oil prices. It may even trickle down to the consumers. Who knows?
Well, compared to the early 80s, for example, I mean, inflation has changed all of these values. Today's price, it's still pretty high.
They're high, but they're not nearly as high as they were in the 1980s. And if this were the 1980 dollars, or if we were back in the 1980s and we were using today's dollar, we'd already be paying close to $3 or more a gallon. So we're still cheap on gasoline from historical perspective, and that's maybe why we haven't seen the drop-off in gasoline demand that you would normally expect. In fact, despite the fact that this year we've been at record high prices for most of this year, over the last 4 weeks, gasoline demand has actually risen from a year ago close to 1.5%. And that's usually counterintuitive to what you would normally expect. If oil prices or gas prices go up, you assume the consumers park their cars and, you know, take the bus if they can. But that's not happening. Demand is actually getting stronger, and that's been kind of mystifying the markets, and it's one of the reasons why gas prices keep going up.
Well, let's get some callers on the line. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Eric. Eric's calling us from Bolton, Massachusetts.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
A couple of comments. I live metro west of Boston. And I do freelance work, and I'm making a concerted effort to do less in Boston and more in the Metro West area where I live.
Do you drive to and from these assignments, whatever they are?
Yes. So both to keep my own expenses down and also so that I'm not making as much pollution. So that is certainly affecting my decisions in terms of where I work and where I'm willing to work or trying to work. And secondly, you know, I feel that depending on who's in power in the government has a lot to do with whether or not alternative energy sources are even looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And with this administration, I don't think that's going to be the case at all, because they're involved with the oil business.
Well,
and have been. So, I have a fear that our government is largely not interested.
Let me take that first point first, Eric, and that is the oil companies, of course, they have higher costs, more expensive oil. They pass that price along to you. Do you now charge more to your customers because you have to drive more?
No, I don't. I guess the way I'm trying to deal with that is by having to not go as far instead of raising my prices.
All right. And Phil Flynn, what about Eric's second point on the...
Well, the second point is, I don't know, I was going to ask Eric whether the pollution or the cost of gasoline moved his business or traveled less. He gave two reasons. I wasn't sure which one had more of an impact. But there's no doubt about it. I think... But we have to remember, when it comes to alternative energies, throughout history, the main thing that has driven alternatives, fuels, is high prices. And now at $54, $55 a barrel, it doesn't matter who's in power, the Republicans or the Democrats, the market forces are going to force us into these alternatives. You just have to look at the sales of the new hybrid vehicles. They're going through the roof. Ford and GM is losing money because they're making the big vehicles and they're behind the eight ball, and they've got to play catch-up right now. But the demand for these vehicles is rising. So I think sometimes market forces have a better job at bringing out the alternative fuels as do any type of Republican or Democratic Party.
Eric, thanks very much for the call. Before we let you go, Phil, just wanted to ask you, there's a major oil merger announced today. Texas-based Valero Energy plans to acquire Premcor Incorporated, $6.9 billion in cash and stock. What does it mean, and how might it affect oil? I'm afraid we just have about 35, 40 seconds for you.
I think it means, obviously, they have a lot of money. That's what it means. And some people think they're overpaying for it, but I think it's personally a good move. Basically, if we're going to meet the refining challenges of the future, we need big, strong companies that can afford to expand the capacity. They promise this deal will do that, and that's exactly what this country needs. We need the expansion of capacity, and if it takes a larger company to do it, then so be it.
Phil Flynn, thanks, as always, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Phil Flynn, Vice President and Senior Oil Analyst at Aileron Trading. He joined us from his office in Chicago. After we get back from the break, we'll talk more about how long oil is likely to stay at its current price, again, over $55 a barrel. And we'll take more of your calls, of course. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Cownan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington. We're talking about whether more oil exploration and drilling will bring stable gasoline prices in the future. You're invited to join the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. How has the increase in energy prices affected you and your business? Our email address, if you'd like to get in touch with us that way, totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Jim Burkhard, Director of Oil Market Research at Cambridge Energy Research Associates. He's with us from his office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
The President's meeting today with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Crown Prince Abdullah. Spare oil capacity, the idea of Saudi Arabia as the swing producer. The President's going to be asking Saudi Arabia to produce more oil if it can. Is this something that Saudi Arabia is still capable of doing?
Absolutely. Saudi Arabia still maintains about 1 to 2 million barrels per day of spare oil production capacity, and that accounts for just about all of the spare capacity that there is in the world. But it's most of that spare capacity is of lower quality crude oil, and that's the least desirable type of crude oil in the market right now.
So this would affect their ability to affect the price of oil in the immediate future?
Yes, because when we read and hear about oil prices in the news, we're talking about high-quality, light-sweet crude oil. The Saudis don't have a lot of that in spare capacity right now.
Now, getting back to the longer term, the Saudi oil ministry has talked about developing new fields and bringing them online, something that obviously these things take time. They're talking about bringing this new oil on stream for 2009. Back in the 1980s, when oil prices were high, we saw a growth of oil drilling and exploration and production in places like Mexico and the North Sea and in Alaska. Is that the situation that we might find ourselves in today with high oil prices?
Looking out over the next few years, there is significant potential to increase oil production around the world. But as you mentioned, that the last time around, the early 1980s, it was the North Sea, Alaska, and Mexico that were behind the large increase in production. This time around, most of the potential to increase production outside of OPEC is in countries like Angola, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Russia, and Canada as well. But most of these countries are in Eurasia, the former Soviet Union, Africa, and the Middle East.
And what about inside OPEC?
Within OPEC, there is enormous potential. Saudi Arabia certainly has potential to increase its production capacity, but it takes time. Iraq, no doubt about its potential, but until the security situation improves, we're not going to see a large increase from Iraq. Countries like Algeria, Libya, and Nigeria also have significant potential, as does Venezuela. But the political and investment climate in some of these countries is a question mark with regards to how quickly the potential to increase production will be realized.
And how reliable it might be thereafter.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Rose. Rose is calling from San Diego.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to comment with my own personal experience here. I have been driving a big SUV for quite a few years and decided about 4 or 5 months ago that I couldn't afford the gas anymore because I was spending between $300 and $400 a month just for gas for this car. So I actually went out and bought a smaller car just for commuting back to work, taking my kids to school, that sort of thing, and have, even with the higher prices, you know, in the last few months, I've saved probably about two-thirds on my gas bill.
Now, did you mean you sold the SUV or you kept it in the garage?
I have it still because we have a trailer we like to go camping with occasionally, and I need that to pull it. But, yeah, so, you know, it's parked in my driveway right now, and I don't use it much, but still have it for when we need it. But the bulk of my commuter driving to work and that sort of thing is with my new little car that gets much better gas mileage.
Okay, Rose, thanks very much. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And Jim Burkhardt, we were talking about the supply side. Are there changes on the demand side that may reduce the demand for oil and therefore its price?
The most important factor behind demand growth is global economic growth. And last year we had the strongest rate of global economic growth since the 1970s. And that was the primary reason why we had such exceptional growth in world oil demand. The global economy is cyclical. We will at some point hit a slowdown. And that when that comes, we will see slower oil demand growth. It's just a question of whether it will be later this year or beyond that.
Much of that growth was also in places like China and India that are new and thirsty competitors for energy.
Absolutely. China has accounted for close to 40% of global oil demand growth in the last couple of years. China last year saw its oil demand increase by about 1 million barrels per day. And to give you some context, there's only been one other country ever in history that has seen demand growth increase at such a large rate, and that was the United States for a couple of years in the 1970s. So what we've seen in China is truly spectacular in terms of demand growth.
And as you economists look ahead to projected growth in both India and China, there are going to be that demand is going to be nothing but growing.
The economic potential of both countries is very impressive. Whether China continues to grow year after year at 9-10% GDP growth is a question mark.
Well, even if it slows to half that rate, they're going to be importing more oil.
Yes, China will be importing more oil. The world will also be adding more oil production capacity in coming years. But as you alluded to earlier, it takes a long time to invest, to find and develop new oil fields.
And these it would be increasingly, one would think, not just in a more politically risky area, but also, perhaps environmentally risky areas and places where it's just hard to get to, deep sea or deeper sea drilling.
That's true. A lot of the new growth in oil production capacity is occurring in what we call deep water areas. These are areas such as offshore Angola and the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, where fields are located 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 feet below water. But new technologies have allowed us to tap these fields, which 10, 15 years ago would have been essentially impossible to find and develop.
Let's get another caller on the line. Joel is calling from Oakland, California.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right.
I'm a building contractor in Oakland, and I'll try to, I'm thinking about all these different reasons why, we're in the situation we're in, and on a day-to-day basis, there's no way for me to get materials to the job without the use of a truck. Unfortunately,
the Bay Area has, I think, the highest gas prices anywhere in the country.
It does, and we have a an oil refinery within about 10 miles of where I live.
Before I get emails from Alaska, anywhere in the continental United States, go ahead.
Yeah. There's a number of factors that cause a lot of irritation in this part of the country. The proximity to an oil refinery. A lot of factors like that, but the reality is that I have to start charging more for being able to deliver these products to the job site.
Mm-hmm. And you're a contractor?
That's right.
So you're building houses or apartment buildings, or?
I'm mostly remodeling and also some new construction.
So inevitably, do you pass those prices along to your customers?
Yeah, I have to. And, I start to get a little bit irritated when I start to, you've touched on a lot of these topics already, but, just the lack of just the CAFE standard to begin with is, in terms of the nation's dependency on oil, it's just, unbelievable.
And the CAFE standard, I assume you're talking about the exemption that gets light trucks and things like SUVs away from the enforcement of emission standards and that sort of thing, and fuel efficiency standards, which
exactly.
Of course CAFE is all about.
Exactly. And when I start to think about, the record profits that oil companies have posted over the last few quarters, I'm just kind of wondering, and when you have a... an administration that clearly has such a significant oil background, I just have to wonder, who exactly is going to be supplying the relief, that Americans, are starting to really need now.
The
oil prices.
All right, Joel, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Jim Berker, do you have any answers for him?
Oil is a commodity, and it the price of it fluctuates in relation to demand for that commodity. And remember, in 1998 and early 1999, the price of oil had dropped down to about $12 a barrel. So it does fluctuate, and when we have a period of weaker demand growth, that could take some of the pressure off the price of oil. But again, it takes time for these cycles to play themselves out.
And you see in the president's meeting with Crown Prince Abdullah today, his emphasis on oil prices, as Jim's call indicates, he's under political pressure and economic pressure to try to do something about the price of oil.
That's right, because there are some initial signs that these high oil prices are beginning to have at least a modest impact on inflation. One of the real surprises last year was the lack of a real tangible negative impact on the economy of the highest oil prices ever recorded, at least in nominal terms. But given that we've had these high prices for a year, year and a half now, we may begin to see at least some negative effects on economic growth. Not like in the early 1980s, not at all like that, but again, at least some negative impacts.
Got another caller in, Shane. Shane's with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
You were mentioning a little bit earlier about more advanced drilling and exploration techniques, and I've just finished reading James Kunstler's book, The Long Emergency, and he makes the point that we're approaching a point of diminishing returns on those. And I wanted to see what your guests had to say about the effects of those diminishing returns and how it's going to affect the price here in the next decade.
Jim Burkhardt?
Since the modern oil industry was founded in 1859, there have been periods about every decade or so where we think we're running out of oil. In 1919, the U.S. government predicted that U.S. oil production would begin a decline in the next year or two. That was 1919. The U.S. produced 1 million barrels per day. The U.S. today produces about 7 million barrels per day. But granted, the U.S. is past its peak in oil production, but advances in technology have played a key role ever since the oil industry was founded at allowing us to tap into new supplies. So unless we have a halt to technological innovation, we are likely to see new areas that we're able to tap into because of further innovation.
Well, one of these decades, they're going to be right.
That's right. Oil is oil at some point could run out. But let's remember that the Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of rocks. The oil age could end at some point because of a peak, but it's probably more likely to begin to diminish when other more attractive fuels are developed.
Okay. Shane, thanks for the question.
Thank you.
We're talking about the price of oil and where it's going to be in the years and perhaps decades to come. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And that does raise the question, is the price of oil now high enough that alternative forms of energy that really couldn't compete with oil when it was $26 a barrel, are they becoming more competitive now?
When we talk about alternative forms of energy, we often think of wind power and solar power. And they can be viable sources of energy, at least in some niche markets. But to talk about a replacement for liquid fuels, for gasoline and diesel, there really aren't any on the horizon at this point in time, at least one that could be made commercially viable, say, in the next 5 years. But there are other innovations which could begin to increase the efficiency in terms of how we use oil. For example, the hybrid. The hybrid car, if it were to be widely adopted over the next 10 to 15 years, could lead to significant gains in efficiency, which essentially would lead to a lower rate of oil demand growth.
Well, here's an email we got from Jeff Kane in Mammoth Lakes, California. In experimenting with my four-wheel drive truck, I found that I can increase my gas mileage about 20% from 20 to 24 miles per gallon by driving 55 miles an hour instead of 70. That's about 60 extra miles out of every tank, which currently costs about $45 to fill. This is a real savings every day, not to mention increased safety for myself, other drivers, and wayward wildlife. He did title his email, Jimmy Carter Was Right. He, of course, President Carter imposed a 55-mile-an-hour national speed limit, which proved to be wildly unpopular. So that doesn't seem to be much of a national solution, or we're still a long way from that, don't you think, Jim?
We're still a long ways from finding an alternative to oil, at least in the transport sector. In the early 80s, when oil demand fell, that was largely due to oil being backed out of power generation. We used to use a lot of oil to generate power. Now we hardly use any, at least in the United States. But in terms of transport, what we put in our cars, there's not a real viable alternative, at least when we look out at the next 5-10 years.
Let's get another caller in, and Michael. Michael's with us from San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you doing, Neil? It's always a pleasure to listen to your show.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for taking my call. I'm a taxi driver, an owner taxi driver here in San Francisco, so I have to take care of all my expenditures and all my costs. And, of course, you well know that the cost of gas here is higher than anywhere else, and it has increased my overhead, but our company has introduced, last year we purchased, we're the largest company, Yellow, in San Francisco, and we purchased 10 hybrid SUV Ford Escapes, and we've seen a real benefit in fuel savings in that regard, and we're just doing a year run on these to see if they can handle all the abuse, you know, as far as the rigors of being a taxi cab.
Yeah, any
much? As far as my own personal opinion goes, you know, if we look at the rate of inflation over the last 50 years, what we're paying for gas now is about what we were paying for then, and I think we need to wake up to reality that in this world economy, there's going to be demands for these you know, fossil fuels in other parts of the world, and that's going to be passed on to us paying more for it. So even though I'm paying more, it really doesn't bother me one bit. I think that it's inevitable it's going to cost more, and we're going to have to think more about how we drive and what we do, and hopefully it'll increase my business.
Michael, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
And thanks, Neil. Bye-bye.
Jim Burkhardt, we have 30 seconds with you left, but basically, is Michael right, at least over the next few years?
Well, I think these high prices will make people reflect on their driving behavior and see if there are ways where they can economize better. some lower income consumers, I think, have felt the effects more than the middle to higher income consumers. But if prices remain this high, I think there will be a larger segment of the population that at least considers their behavior and the impact that it has on their gasoline consumption.
We'll be back with more on this point when we come back from a break. My name is Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In just a moment, a poll examines what Democratic voters think about values. But let's first finish up our conversation on oil prices, which are high and maybe stabilizing, maybe going a little higher. Our guest is Jim Burkhard, the Director of Oil Market Research at Cambridge Energy Research Associates in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And let's get another caller on the line. John. John's with us from Bowling Green, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a question. It seems to me that the most immediate solution that the administration and the economy is looking for this problem is to increase the volume coming into the country. But nobody seems to want to address the fact that we haven't had a new refinery built in several decades in the United States. Even if we increase the quantity of oil coming into the country, that doesn't mean we're going to be able to refine it in a timely fashion. Can we, as a country, do something about that problem?
Jim Burkhard?
It's true that there hasn't been a refinery built in the United States for 30 years or so, but overall refining capacity, the capacity to refine crude oil in the United States, has increased over the last decade. That's because existing facilities have expanded their production capacity. And the refining industry, for the better part of the last 20 years, did not enjoy very strong returns. There was not a strong incentive to add capacity and certainly not to build a new greenfield facility because the returns were simply not that attractive. It's just been in the last couple of years where the returns in the refining industry have become more attractive.
And is that resulting in plans to develop new refineries in this country?
There are plans to increase refining capacity in the United States and also elsewhere. But in the U.S., it's going to be at existing facilities.
At existing facilities. John, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks a lot.
And Jim Burkhard, we wanted to thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil. I enjoyed it.
Jim Burkhard is Director of Oil Market Research at Cambridge Energy Research Associates.